It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Halloween. It's almost a game day. Sabres are back at it tomorrow. It's Hockey Fights Cancer Night. With Marty, I'm Brian. Now, is it time to think of renaming ourselves? Ivan, of course, has taken
Ivan,
the NHL.
Ivan? Ivan.
Ivan is how he's pronounced, yes, in the NHL.
Yes.
Has taken the league by storm the last week amongst a depleted Avalanche squad. It is Marcel Marcel's birthday. He is drafted by the Hawks in 2023, trying to make his way up from the AHL into the NHL. So if we start going down this path, which of the two of us has the better name to replicate, and which one would you choose?
Well, could I go with Marty Martin?
Martin.
It needs to be the same. Yeah, but they would call me Marty. But yes, Martin Martin would be, remember Phillips, that one American Idol years ago? Like he was so Phillips. Yep. That's a tough one.
But you've added an S there and it's not the same. So
yeah, I know what you're saying. It's not identical. Brian would be,
well, what's
unique.
Better, Brian or Biron?
No, like it wouldn't be Biron. Like it wouldn't be Duff. Like Duffy Duff, but no, I could see Duffy Duff. Duff.
Is that not like the royal poodle? Come here, Duff Duff.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that's okay. And I have a poodle, but no, I think Martin Martin would probably be the more likely to happen.
I like Martin Martin. All right, so book it. We may have that from here to 4. Ryan Miller, your battery mate. You can call him whatever. He's already in the Sabres Hall of Fame. Now he's going into the Amherst Hall of Fame. Do you have a slight, position of bragging rights here in that you got in the Amherst all before him?
100%. Although Ryan Miller is much younger and he needed to spend a few years with the anticipation that one day he'd get into the Amherst Hall of Fame. But I am at the arena today. And so when I went downstairs to the locker room. Actually, our very own Paul Hamilton on WGR 550 was like, Marty, what did you think of Millsy joining you in the Hall of Fame? I hadn't heard the news yet. Like, I hadn't checked, social media. I hadn't heard. So I just responded with, the more the merrier. And bring it all to the Hall of Fame in Rochester. Like, make it a big group. It's fun when we all get together. But congratulations on Millsy. Well-deserved. He had a big impact in Rochester, obviously, and a big impact in Western New York when it comes to hockey. And so well-deserved for him again.
April 11th is when he will be having his ceremony at Blue Cross Arena. Laval will be in at that point in time. And I can just about guarantee you that April 11th clash will be very significant in the North Division. So may as well get your tickets now for a multitude of reasons.
Do you guarantee a 17 goal outburst like my induction night? I think it was like a 13-5 or 13-4 win by the Amherst that night. It was something crazy. Like by the time I was done signing autographs and taking pictures, I got back to the suite with my family. It was already like 10-2. And it was like late in the second, early in the third. It was crazy.
Yes, and we talked yesterday with Michael Hauser, who is likely to get at least one of the games this weekend for the Amherst in Utica. The Comets lost again yesterday. They are 0-7 to start the year. and having two at home. So I think it makes it a really stressful weekend. It's just, you know, there's going to be tension on the home side. And again, this is, it's very, very hard, even when both teams are like going well or whatever, to just go into somebody's building and sweep them. So big test ahead for the Amherst. However, after your 24-hour celebration period where you felt that social media was in agreement with you.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Changes have happened at Sabres practice.
He did not listen to our show yesterday. He did not pay attention to our show yesterday when it comes to the changes at practice today.
Please take us through the changes you've seen and, you know, what you expect from this group of 12 forwards.
If Lindy Ruff ever comes to you or I and say, oh, you know what, we put your show on all the time in the background in the office, he's lying. Because never once did we discuss any of the changes that have happened at practice today. I thought it was more about changing the top six and maybe mortgaging the Thompson, Tuck, Paterka line for the benefit of Cousins, Quinn, and, you know, well, what was Krebs and what had been Kulik, and Benson is not factoring into the mix now, you know, with the injury. So I thought this was the way to go. You keep the McLeod line together, you keep the Lafferty line together. But the change that we have at practice today is in the middle six. The top line stays the same with Paterka, Thompson, and Tuck. And the Lafferty line stays the same with Malenstein and Obi Kubel. But we have a significant change where Dylan Cousins is moving to the wing on the McLeod and Greenway line. Krebs is going to be in the middle of Quinn and Zucker, which is a very significant look because Dylan Cousins has always been like a middle of the ice center. Cousins, middle stat. It was Thompson, Cousins, McLeod. It was always Cousins there to support Thompson as the 2C. But now Cousins has been moved to the wing. Krebs, who has earned, he's earned the promotion. I think Peyton Krebs has played well. Does that translate into more offense from him with Quinn or more Quinn offense? Who knows? But Krebs has played well, so he's earned the promotion. But you move Dylan Cousins to the wing, that's a significant move, I think, for the middle six.
I feel like you did kind of call it in the sense of elevation of McLeod. Do you see this as elevation of McLeod or not really?
Well, not really. I think it's a McLeod and Greenway are on the same, you know, the duo. Like Lindy Ruff talks about what my duos are. We've seen Zucker move up and down the lineup a couple of times. So I think he believes Greenway and McLeod are staying together. And I'm not going to say, okay, the McLeod line's the third line, and we're going to put Zucker and Krebs and Quinn as your second line. I think the middle six is like, whatever. But, so in a way, you could say, well, Cousins is staying on that second line. He's just moving over to the wing. Or you can look at it and say Cousins has been dropped down to the third line and dropped down to the wing, right? So there's a double negative in that sense here. If you look at it that way, I just think that it's to give Dylan Cousins a little bit of break and hopefully try to spark something on a different look, a line that we've never seen together with Zucker, Krebs, and Quinn, and maybe they can get some offense. Zucker's been, you know, a playmaker. You pointed that out in the pregame the other night. He's gotten results. Krebs has earned that spot, so maybe that works with Jack Quinn.
When you look at changes at 5-on-5 potentially, and then transfer it over to the power play, you know, configuration like a second unit today with Power and Tuck, Byram, Krebs, and Quinn. And again, if anybody's wondering, you know, where's Yuri Kulik in all of this, he appears to be projected to be a scratch once again. You know, how do you look at when you make changes to lines, but then you see opportunities presented to guys on power play? Does it cause you to try to read everything a little differently? Like that this player has earned more of a power play look, or this player is the one that we really need to put in this situation to get going? Like, how do you bundle all these little tweaks together?
Well, it's kind of funny because I even though the power play did not score in the last game, but at two games with at least a goal, it was Zucker that got a goal, you know, in consecutive games. No, they did score last game, right? Zucker got the goal against Bob. So that was the last two games they scored. I added a game in between. So, but I still feel that the power play, the configuration right now for me is fine. They've made some moves to hit Thompson in the bumper. They moved Thompson around off a face-off. They're looking for different looks. Seth Appert said on WGR early this week, I think it was Tuesday, that, well, teams know that their number one play is trying to feed Tage Thompson. So we're trying to work some other angles and open up some other passing lane. But that's always going to be there. And I think the Sabres have looked to feed Thompson a couple of times, even too much, because last Saturday, the Sabres won the game, but Dahlin and Thompson were playing back and forth, and Dahlin wanted to feed Thompson that one timer, an extra pass, and it ended up being a shorthanded goal. So those things happen when you force things. The power play to me is looked good to just say, hey, we don't have to worry about it. 5-on-5 is where the changes needed to happen. So look, Zucker staying on the top power play unit, I think, is important because he's produced. Krebs getting a look now as more of an offensive role. You're looking at Krebs isn't putting in an offensive role, playing with Zucker on a line with Quinn and playing on the second power play. Okay, let's see what you can do, because you've never had that role with the Sabres before, and your offensive production was never one that warranted or, you know, was gifted a role offensively. So now let's see what you can do.
What else could be behind the changes here? I.e., is it a short window to look at more players to then evaluate the potential for a trade? And I say this because obviously the doors have swung wide open in the last week with trades across the NHL. Some out of absolute necessity, like Olimata going to Utah. But Liljegren's been sitting there and sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. He finally gets dealt to San Jose, right? Mm-hmm. Toronto gets some picks and a more veteran defenseman in Benning back. Like, so it's starting to move here. And this was on the heels of Dreger joining us in week one or week one and a half to two, where he was saying the Trots was openly already looking for a centerman in Nashville, right? So, so I don't think we should be hanging our hats on this it's too early sentiment anymore. The doors are open, and based on what Elliot wrote, you know, in his Sportsnet column, like what do you interpret from that as far as, you know, again, if you're not evaluating your roster, which they are, on a daily basis, and comparing it to what you're up against, it, you're going to fall behind here. So I think what we're seeing today is making sure we don't fall behind. Yeah, we had a good stretch of 4-1-1, but we cannot afford to be losing back-to-back games this weekend, because we've already seen just the other day, Florida and Tampa were super close, and now they're quite a ways ahead, right?
And so, now because your schedule was a little lighter, so now they've played a little more games, and now they jumped ahead in points, right? Because you played a couple of games earlier. But so here's the thing. When you looking outside, I almost want to approach that yesterday when we were talking about things, is to, you know, maybe we need to start thinking who else somewhere else could come in and help the Cousins and Quinn line. Because, you know, they tried Yuri Kulik there. Is Kulik the right fit to try to get Cousins going and to get Quinn going? Well, he's first year guy. Like, that's a lot of responsibility to say, I'm going to get those two going. Should be the other way around. Should be Cousins and Quinn that get Kulik going. And now they're trying something else. They're trying Cousins on the wing. But at some point, you may have to think, hey, if the Thompson line keeps going the way that it's going, and you don't want to break him apart, and the McLeod with Greenway and whoever Zucker or somebody else is going, and you like your fourth line in the role that they are, well, you're going to need to go and find help somewhere else for that second line. Right now, you're testing internally. And look, saying that Kevin Adams is calling all the GMs and he's very active, should be. Like, it's a month into the season now. played 10 games. You should be checking in with all 31 of the GMs at least, you know, every other day or, you know, a couple times a week at this moment to say, hey, you know, how you feel? What do you need? What do you got? Sabres have two extra defensemen. Dennis Gilbert played one game because they dressed seven defensemen. Jacob Bryson hasn't played in any games. Like, there's got to be a moment where you're like, hey, this is something we can use now to maybe go get something that's going to help us bring in depth, especially on the second line. Is it easy to make? No, like nobody wants to give a second liner for a sixth or a seventh or an eighth defenseman, but there's got to be something that can be worked or at least start the conversation with so that in 3 weeks from now, you really need to make it happen. It's already been discussed.
Yeah, and it's just so, you know, it's, I can't imagine how frustrating it is for Zach Benson right now not being a part of all this evaluation and potential production, right?
Yeah, but he could be the answer, right? He comes back and all of a sudden you put Benson and but now I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay, where do you put him? Because on the wing, the only one that could come out again would be a Jack Quinn. Because Benson is not a fourth line guy. I think that Lindy Ruff, the way that he always had his teams and the way this thruster is built is that that line of Malenstein, Lafferty, and Obi Kubel, even if they play 8 minutes one night or 10 minutes the other night, that's going to stay together. Like, you're not putting Jack Quinn on a fourth line to play 8 minutes. You're not putting Zach Benson on a fourth line to play 8 minutes. These guys get their role. They play their role. They're fast. They're physical. They may be killing penalties. That's what they will do. But out of the other six wingers, who do you take out for either Yuri Kulik or Zach Benson to come back or to reinsert the lineup? Like, the Sabres play back-to-back, Friday, Saturday. So Friday you play, often they make an adjustment to the lineup. Okay, if you insert Kulik on Saturday, who do you take out? Is it Jack Quinn? Because that would be, again, the one that you're not taking out Tuck and Paterka. You're not taking out Zucker. You're not taking out Greenway. Are you going to take out Cousins? So it's Jack Quinn again. That's the one that's left off because the production's not there.
Yeah, I don't. You know me. I don't think I'm going to land on that. I would think it would be more of a rotation of, you know, the four newcomers at the bottom of the 12 forwards, 13 forwards, right?
That, yeah, so you mean, but you include Krebs in there?
Lafferty, on any given night, Lafferty comes out, Obi Kubel comes out, maybe Krebs if he has an off game. But that's where I would see the rotation. And I think a lot of fans would look at it that way because they would be more partial to trying to maintain some Quinn presence, traction, all the rest of it, right?
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
The whole discussion changed today because of Cousins on the wing.
And Krebs elevated to the middle.
You can't just like project a healthy lineup and then, okay, but if you're projecting a healthy lineup next week and Dylan has back-to-back hat tricks on the wing this weekend, like what's happening, right? Like, is then he a full-time winger? And then are you going, okay, well, who's going to play center for this team, right? So it's interesting. There's lots of guys that can play center. I'm not phrasing it that way, but
When you start looking outside and you're like, okay, now our issue isn't going to get a winger to play with Cousins and Quinn. Now our role and our discussion gets shifted to, okay, maybe now we got to go and try to acquire a center. Nashville is trying to look for a center. The conversation around the league about centers is happening too. Probably more, you know, it's more prevalent in the trade talks of looking for a center than looking for a winger. But I agree with you. On paper, Malenstein, Lafferty, Obi Kubel, Krebs would be the guys that would be doing that rotation, right? You get guys in, guys out. But you've just elevated Krebs to say, hey, get a bigger role at center. You're a power play guy. You earned it. You've played well. Is the production still there? No. But it's better, you know, found the back of the net, which is more that Dylan Cousins can say now. And Jack Quinn, well, it was an empty net goal. So I think right now it kind of, by looking at performances, it takes Krebs out of that conversation of who's in the rotation. Would it be there again in a week? Possibly, if Cousins plays well and if Quinn plays well. But if Quinn plays well, maybe that's because Krabs played well. And now you're still back to the same conversation as who comes out. That's a tough place to be.
And in your honest opinion, how much do special teams play a role in all of this? Because when I mention a potential rotation of bottom six guys that could come out of a lineup, they are also here for a reason. And that is to boost the penalty kill. So somebody in this group has to really take charge, ownership, call it what you will, of being the best of the best at making sure this percentage on the penalty kill hovers closer to 80% and higher than 70% and lower, which it has at times over the last couple of years, right? So it's all well and good to sit here and say, oh, like this guy could spark this guy, but you still have a percentage of the game which can be game-changing that you need to trust guys. And I don't know if they found that yet on the penalty kill. Do you?
I don't think that they found that yet on the penalty kill, although I think that we're seeing more of the same group of players being on the penalty kill now, and that group of players is looking like they found a little bit of a rhythm. But when I look at the way that the penalty kill has gone the last few games, I could maybe start to think of they found their spots, right? Like they had gone, man, like what was it? Three games in a row, I think, without giving up a shorthand, a power play goal. So now, you know, that changed. But and Lindy Ruff talked about taking too many penalties, and that affected the game against Florida. But I do feel that the penalty kill is starting to round into shape to where they want it to go. Is it still good at 74%? No, it needs to be 80 plus, and we all know that it should be 83-84% and over. But at least it's starting to go. So the guys that are on it, the Greenway, the McLeod, the Malenstein, the, you know, Lafferty, the Krebs to a certain extent at time, and Tuck is playing a lot of different roles. They, I feel, are the ones that you say our penalty kill has to stay the same, has to continue to show consistency. The guys that are on the power play, they usually play every night. The Thompson, the Dahlin, you know, the Tuck, and the Quinn and the Cousins and those guys, they usually play every night. Can they come out of the lineup? Yeah, they can. But the main guys play every night. It's the ones that are stuck in between. And again, it goes back to like when Benson comes back. Is Benson a penalty killer or a power play guy? Or is he none of the above? And if he's none of the above, well, then it's hard because you don't have a secondary role other than the 5-on-5 contribution you can give.
Well said. I think there's a lot to digest. you can just casually glance at a practice and go, oh, that's interesting. Most people would just say, they move Cousins to the wing. But then there's just so many other areas you can look at it. And obviously exhaust 22 minutes of conversation around it without even having a game played, which doesn't happen until tomorrow. But it's going to be a special one because it's Hockey Nights Cancer Night. I understand that you may have got a little preview today.
Yes, I went down to the locker room and met Jack, a very fine young man who had his purple, white and purple jersey on. And I was the first one to sign his jersey, by the way. And Jordan Greenway came over and he signed it next to me. And then I told him to sign a lot bigger, like make it more like, you know, I'm just an old guy here, but let's go. But it was awesome. You said there's some nerves, obviously, for tomorrow night. But I get nervous for tomorrow night, too, because I love Hockey Fights Cancer. I think it's a great evening for the community, for the people in the community, just not just for the hockey people, but the people in the community. It's awesome. But you know what I realize is that Utah has two Hockey Fights Cancer night this year, and Nashville also will do two Hockey Fights Cancer. They're doing one now. They're doing one later in the year in March and February because of some local things that they do. They partner up. So they actually will have two. And I'm like, okay, let's do five. We have Roswell here. Like, we have one of the best, you know, cancer comprehensive centers in the U.S. here. Like, let's do five Hockey Fights Cancer Night. Let's go. Let's bring more awareness.
I know Nashville has done multiple before, and regardless, the more the merrier. You are correct in that regard. You'll be happy to know that I got a message this morning from Tyler Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
Just wanted to say good luck tomorrow night, and thank you for everything, and to say hello to you and our crew. And
did he chat about baseball? Because he must have been tuned in.
I asked him who he was cheering for, and I kind of knew the answer because, of course, as a Braves fan, it was probably really painful to see Freddie Freeman doing as well as he was for the Dodgers. So, yes, he was cheering for the team that lost the World Series. I, of course, was cheering for the team that won the World Series.
I was cheering for the team that won. And I know there's a lot of Yankee fans here, and I get it. Now, I was kind of like brought into cheering for the Orioles the last few years because of my son, my father-in-law being Orioles fans. So Yankees, Orioles, a big rivalry, although I'm a Blue Jays fan too. So Blue Jays and Orioles are both in the same division, the AL East. But I was cheering for the Dodgers. But I'll tell you this, what I dislike most in professional sport, not just hockey, baseball, in professional sports, is when a team, a professional team, that is in the World Series, Duffer, or in the Stanley Cup Final, or in the Super Bowl, blows it. And blows it by mental mistakes. Like you've played your game, all of that. You're going to let it go on mental mistakes? Oh, I was so frustrated by watching the way the Yankees imploded, because it was things that they've done thousands and thousands of times in their lives, and in this one moment, everybody decided they forgot what they're doing.
It's baseball, man.
I know it's baseball. It's like the guy at first base who ran down the guy back towards home with two outs. All he had to do is step on the first base bag, forced out, the inning's over, and then they created a full commotion. In that moment, there was a brain fart that happened, and sometimes it happens. But that's the thing, though. At the best of professional levels, hockey, football, basketball, whatever. Remember years ago, LeBron James, the meme, where one of his teammates grabbed the rebounds and started running the other way because he thought the score was like they were up by one, but the score was tied. All he had to do was put it back in. And LeBron is like, where are you going? But that's like professional sports. It happens, but it drives me nuts.
It takes it for me, it just reinforces first of all, the wonderful volunteers at the youngest levels that try to teach sports to kids. And watching our girls play softball and learn and learn and learn. But every year, the coach, you know, reinforcing the fundamentals, right? Knowing full well and often reminding them, if a mistake happens, don't beat yourself up over it. It happens at the highest level every single night. And it was never more apparent than last night, right? So there were plays that reminded me of exact moments when Izzy and Ree were in, you know, playoff softball games and things happen, right? And it's just like, holy cow, this is sports. It doesn't matter what age you're playing it, and mistakes happen. And all I could think after seeing the replay on Judge was, of course, Bill Buckner, right? And those are those moments. And I get it. Franchise history, completely different at those points in time, whatever. But those are, and can you recover from them? Of course you can. They'll have another great team next year. And the Dodgers didn't have it easy on their path to now winning two in the last 5 years. So whatever, right? Like, it's just, I think of baseball as a soap opera because it's on in your television every day for like 6 months, right?
So I know we got to go to break. Yeah. I know we're going to have to go to break quickly, but it is the only dragger. And I will tell him that. But okay, here's a play that didn't do anything in the baseball game last night that I'm like, if that would have happened the way that I think it could have happened, it would. So Yankees are tied 5-5. They just blew it, right? They two outs, runner on first and third. One out, runner on first and third. Fly ball to center field, deep center field. So you're like, that's a sack fly. The guy from third's going to score, no problem. But I think it was Chisholm Jr. that was on first base. He tried to extend and to get to second. So the center fielder, when he catches it, throws it right to second base. Now, if he had, he was saved by a foot. Okay. But if he had been tagged out, the runner wouldn't have counted because he slowed down running from third to home and he would have gotten tagged before he crossed home plate. And I'm like, how do you do that as the third base? I would have sprinted my butt off because I know he's going to want to extend and go to second to try to score more runs, but I should be there at home plate before. Like, it just, oh, it drives me nuts, baseball, when people don't think the game.
Hockey Fights Cancer tomorrow night. We want to see you there. It's, as always, presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Print or download the placard and write the name of the person you are fighting for, and you could win tickets for this event. Visit sabres.com/fight today. Darren Dreger next on Sabres Live.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We say that about the weekly appearances of Darren Dreger, and that's why we're thrilled to have him once again here from his home office on TSN, bringing the insider goods. Darren, how are you?
Doing well. I'm inside, you're outside. This is terrific.
We've got it all covered. And you know,
we're in different locations. You're in the same, but me and Duffer are in different locations.
I sometimes like need to remind myself, start with the good. You know, it's too easy to just pile on and look for negativity. So let me say this.
Yeah, I like it.
I enjoyed so much watching Elvis Merzlikins last night look like the best version of Elvis Merzlikins. He now has 60 saves on 61 shots the last two games. They've won both. They've done it in a little different manner. Had been high scoring. Last night they were able to lock it down, play a tight game against the Islanders to come in here, you know, tomorrow night. What can you say about everything that has materialized with the Jackets so far, given everything they've had to deal with?
Oh, man, it's such a great story, and good on you for starting with a positive. And the Columbus Blue Jackets are exactly that. Like, it's weird at this point in the regular season. It's not brand new that the Jackets are surprising teams and good teams. You know, Edmonton got slapped around earlier this week. Yeah. Last week it was the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, teams that, you know, shouldn't have their way with any other club in the National Hockey League, but they should be better than the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yet the speed of the Blue Jackets, the structure, the goaltending, I mean, they seem to have it all. And I mean, how much of this is emotionally motivated? And I think that there's a fair bit of that. You know, if you're Dean Evason, new coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Don Waddell, the new general manager, I mean, the unthinkable happened, right? The loss of Johnny Gaudreau and his brother, Matthew. The only option you have is to pull the organization up from the ashes. And I think that in many ways, it had to galvanize this group because, you know, Waddell knew coming in that getting this team back on the rails was going to be a challenge. It was going to be formidable. You know, he goes through the coaching scenario and ends up with Dean Evason, and then just the tragedy hits and the whole world is upside down. So it's just a brilliant positive story right now.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely that. And Don Waddell this morning in the offices in Columbus riding a scooter dressed as the Green Lantern, really enjoying the Halloween festivities. But you're right. He's pushed the right button. Now, Duffer, you know how I have liked Elvis Merzlikens over the last little bit here. And watching him play was one that was, you know, a really rewarding thing for him last night. Dean Evason doing some really good work behind the bench. Now, the New York Islanders, I'll go to the negative. I'm a positive guy, but I'll go to the negative right now, Dregs.
Here we go.
The New York Islanders, they're not scoring much. They're in Buffalo tomorrow night. And Patrick Roy, you know, two nights ago, he's like, oh, we played well. We were the better team against Anaheim. Just couldn't get a goal. You know, they scored a 5-on-3, I believe, on Tuesday night. That was their only goal. And then they get shut out for the fourth time, I believe, this year, last night. We are starting to see coaches on the hot seat. Is Patrick Roy on the hot seat in New York Islanders?
I mean, I can appreciate the feeling that that could be the case. You know, for me, it's still too early for that. The one thing that I continually get, you know, when I poke around the New York Islanders, and it's mostly because of what you just said here, Marty. I mean, there's a ton of inconsistency in how this group is responding and playing on a night-in and night-out basis. So why is that? We know that Patrick Roy historically is hard on players. I mean, he was hard on his teammates when he was starring in the National Hockey League. He was. You know, he just demanded excellence from everybody. How much of that is a factor? Is it wearing on these guys even a little bit? Is he fully on board and in tune with Lou Lamoriello, the general manager who's brought in the players? Or is he looking for something different? There's all kinds of speculation that is swirling around the New York Islanders right now. And I think we could all envision how fascinating that dynamic has to be between Lamoriello and Patrick Roy. I mean, just think about it. I mean, you've got, you know, the spontaneous combustion of Patrick Roy to go along with the stoic my way or the highway approach of Lou Lamoriello. That doesn't always jive, but they're finding a way to work together. But in the end, there's got to be results, and the results have to be wins for the Islanders. So until they get to playing with a level of consistency, I think that there's going to be speculation that continues to swirl around that club.
The cynics, those who, you know, tend to gravitate to a little sarcasm when evaluating teams and situations, probably had a field day last night with the depleted Avalanche squad yet again. This team has rode the roller coaster pretty hard here in the opening month of the year. Losing 4, winning 5. Now they've dropped 2, and they were down to goalie number 3 last night, making his Avalanche debut, and after a routine first save, promptly gave up 3 goals on the next 4 shots, and Kaapo Kähkönen was down, as was the team. They never recovered against Gensel, Kucherov, and the Bolts. However, that depleted lineup, really depleted lineup due to injury, and not just their current, you know, uncertainty in the crease, it ended up having an even more negative impact because a player you probably have never heard of, and Matt Steinberg, comes in and tries to be an energy player and went way over the line in a charging incident into Eric Chernak. And I get it. Everybody in Buffalo is going to say, Chernak deserved it. He's been listed Darlene for years, whatever, whatever. The fact of the matter is, Chernak left the game with a head injury
on a major penalty,
and ultimately, it was a bad look for a guy starting out his NHL career.
Yeah, I mean, just overzealous, right? Oh. I mean, this is a tap-in for George Parros and the Department of Player Safety. I can't see how he isn't suspended, because we can see on the video right here. I mean, he launched himself at Chernak. I mean, it's not an inch or two of space and leaving his feet. I mean, he's a half a foot or more in the air. So that has to be suspendable. And you do worry about the health of the player here. Chernak plays a very physical game. That's the way he's always played. He's an important piece for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So in this case, yeah, they needed some energy, but I wonder about, we just talked about the frustration building around the New York Islanders. You know, for me, the team to watch is Colorado. And I'm not putting, I think Jared Bednar is a terrific NHL coach. So I'm not hinting at what Chris McFarland management ownership might do in Colorado with coaching. I think he's safe. You know, the reality of that situation is they're just all bunged up by players who can't play. You know, like they're $35+ million invested in players who aren't available to that group. So if it weren't for the likes of Nathan MacKinnon and the superstars of the Colorado Avalanche. Imagine where that team would be right now. So they've got a number of different stories kind of swirling around there. But, you know, for the last couple of years anyway, goaltending has been right near the top of the list of the stories in Colorado, but it just doesn't feel like there's a whole lot that Chris McFarland can do to remedy any situation there because of his hands being tied financially.
Yeah, Cernak missed the playoffs a year and a half ago, the 2023 playoffs, after game one against Toronto. Bunting hit him in the head with an illegal hit to the head, had a concussion, yeah. You know, long recovery. So that's never good to see somebody getting hit in the head like that, even anybody. So that's never good. So that leads me to, well, Tampa now is a defenseman down. Liljegren got traded to San Jose, as Duffer was mentioning earlier. The Sabres have two extra defensemen in Dennis Gilbert and Jacob Bryson. Kevin Adams is probably working the phones. I want to like say this player, that player, but I think the Sabres are looking for maybe a forward at some point. They may have to. They change their lines today. Anything that could be happening soon, or is this more like, okay, let's revisit that at the end of November?
Yeah, probably the latter here, Marty. But it's timely because of the trades that we've seen this week, right? The two defensemen that get traded, Ole Mata, and last night, Timothy Liljegren from the Toronto Maple Leafs to the San Jose Sharks. So clearly teams are starting now to process what they have and the fact that they'd like to see some upgrades, right? And if you ask Kevin Adams, he would tell you he likes the look of the Buffalo Sabres. He does. But just doing his job, he's got to be searching for upgrades in all positions. I mean, primarily, yeah, you're right. You're looking at forwards, potentially on defense. But it doesn't sound, based on the sources that I've talked to, that he's pinpointing either position. I think he's actually dabbling across the league. And, you know, he's probably looking defensively at teams that maybe have some depth or strength there, likewise with forwards, and seeing if there's some form of connection to what Buffalo has, either in the system or what the Buffalo Sabres have on the roster. So there's nothing imminent. There's nothing front burner here. But I think it is noteworthy and interesting that he's working diligently in search of an upgrade, but nothing close. I do think, though, as we get deeper into the season, that's when you start to look at some of the contract players, right? Mm-hmm. So now you're looking at Bo Byram. And then you're looking at Peyton Krebs, and you're looking at some of these other pieces and, you know, kind of balancing that against internally, is there more value in these players longer term? And if so, what does that negotiation look like? Do these players want to stay in Buffalo long term? And if they don't, then how quickly do you act in considering some of the trade interest that will be in those guys? Those are two of the players that I'm going to watch closely out of Buffalo moving forward here.
Can Vegas make the playoffs simply by going unbeaten at home? Because they cannot win on the road. They are a disaster outside of the fortress. They've lost all four. They were not good against LA. Marty, another situation where last night should have taken advantage of a tired team. LA had just played the night before. Somehow,
LA got stuck by San Jose. Exactly. So,
yeah, it was bad. It was just not good. I mean, your favorite goaltender did not have a great game in the Golden Knights crease there, Marty. So,
no, but Vegas, Dregs, you think Vegas is probably, despite the fact they lost to LA, can win on the road, one of the strongest Western Conference team now, when you look at the Oilers not playing well, Colorado not playing well, and Vancouver not having Thatcher Demko, you got to kind of fall on Vegas now to be the favorite out West, right?
No, Winnipeg, Minnesota, like those are teams that are playing way better, I think.
Yeah, and Dallas for me is probably the best. You know, anytime I think of Vegas and the success that they have, it comes down to the health of that team. And you can say that about any team and any of their top players. But we've been down the road with Mark Stone and the Vegas Golden Knights. And right now, Mark Stone has been terrific out of the gate. Alex Petrangelo, Jack Eichel. I mean, these are the principal primary pieces, you know, of what makes the Vegas Golden Knights as strong as they are. And they're strong. But, you know, is that sustainable for the rest of this regular season? Or is there a situation where, Mark Stone is going to need a little rest? Well, you're down that path. But I think they're a contending team. I think it's impossible to deny that.
Yeah.
LTII. But I'm not talking about the Jets stuff. I told you, I'm not talking about the Jets. They don't even exist for me now.
I'm well aware of your ignorance to some of the best performers so far in the NHL this year. Another three-pointer for Kyle Connor last night.
Yes.
What a tear he is on. And presumably will find himself in a very high-profile situation when the Four Nations tournament rolls around. Drakes, thanks for joining as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys, have a great weekend.
Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Marty, let's put a bow on the out-of-the-gates topic today of the line changes in Sabres land.
You know, I got a nice little hockey skate in my neck. I'll tie it up. Okay, Lindy Ruff said after practice when he spoke to the media that they're trying to get Boat, Cousins, and Jack a little bit of a different look and see if it works and gets them a little bit more offense and get them going, basically. So Cousins moving to the wing with McLeod and Greenway, and Quinn now with Krebs in the middle and Zucker on the left. So the middle six is looking completely different, trying to get Dylan and Jack going offensively.
Is Jim Hiller the front runner for the Jack Adams Award? Benched Kevin Fiala, scratched Kevin Fiala, had him come back in and contribute a goal and a helper in a 6-3 win over Vegas.
I wouldn't say that, but is Kevin Fiala the best liar in the world when he said, my phone's broken, I never set an alarm on an iPad before, time was wrong, like I didn't hear it, so that's why I missed the meeting?
I think he was telling the truth. We'll see you tomorrow.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.